You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and thank you for, my apologies for being gone for the last 2 days. And just to bring you up to date, Louise had breast cancer surgery on Monday, and in fact, she's insisting that I be back in this chair today. She and I owned this business together, and she's like, "You will have a good program for me to come back to." She it looks like they got all the cancer out and her nodes are clear. For those of you who know what that means, this is like very good news, very early. And our youngest daughter, who is an EMT and a medical student, is has come out here and is staying with Louise right now, is with her. So all is well. Thank you for your prayers and your good regards. It's now just going to be, you know, some months of chemo and, you know, the normal drill, but we're very optimistic. So, all that said, let's talk about everything else that's going on in the world. John Nichols is on the line with us, and from Wisconsin. John, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be with you, Tom, and I think a lot of your fans out here are sending special greetings to Louise.
Thank you.
Good spirit.
Thank you. She is, and she makes this show what it is. I should add, you're the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, thenation.com, and all that sort of thing. We had there was an election over the last couple of days, and actually there were several elections, but one of the more interesting ones was two Democratic districts that were held by Blue Dog Democrats, and I'm not one of those people who reflexively trashes Blue Dogs. I know that the first vote that a person makes in the House of Representatives is the most important one they'll ever make, which is the vote for leadership. And in other words, if there's a majority of Democrats, you get to have Nancy Pelosi in charge. Without a majority, you get John Boehner. That's a big deal, even if they're Blue Dog Democrats. On the other hand, it would be nice to have more progressive Democrats. And here we had two Blue Dog Democrats whose districts got reapportioned. And tell us what happened.
Well, it's a really good story, and I think you're coming at it right, Tom. It's important to remember that Blue Dog Democrats don't all fit in the same mold. There are some Blue Dog Democrats who, for instance, have been very strong players against free trade agreements, and others have stepped up on other issues. So we shouldn't just reflexively be critical. But the two Blue Dog Democrats who were in play yesterday in Pennsylvania, Congressman Tim Holden up in the Northeast, and Congressman Jason Altmaier in the western part of the state, had really gone, you know, very far afield from the Democratic Party. They voted against health care reform, not because they didn't think it went far enough, but because they thought it went too far. They sided with the Republicans on that.
Against the president on Obamacare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They also, and I think even more importantly, were critical Democratic votes, key Democratic votes, in favor of Republican balanced budget amendments and budget issues in general. Both of these guys stood up and made a big deal about voting with the Republicans against the Democrats on issues and at times where the Democrats were saying, look, you're talking about cutting Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security here. You're talking about doing real damage to health care, education funding in this country by these moves. And so they became, I think, particularly attractive players to challenge, and they were challenged. In one case, Mark Crist, who is a sitting congressman just recently elected, was thrown into the same district with Jason Altmaier.
Mm-hmm.
Crist ran hard as a labor candidate. He had strong backing from the labor movement, especially from the United Steelworkers, and he made it absolutely clear that there was a distinction. He had voted against the balanced budget amendment. He had split with the Republicans on budget issues, and he did so because he wanted to protect Medicare and because he wanted to maintain funding, especially for industrial manufacturing development in his part of Pennsylvania. The other case up in the Northeast, where you had Tim Holden, the dean of the Democratic delegation in Pennsylvania, he was challenged by a guy named Matt Cartwright, who I'm going to bet is undoubtedly a Tom Hartman listener. Matt Cartwright, very, very progressive trial lawyer up in Northeast Pennsylvania, decided to get into this race because the district had been made clearly more Democratic. And he ran, intriguingly enough, with a lot of environmental support, League of Conservation voters and others, also some unions, making the point that Tim Holden had sided with the Republicans again and again on energy issues and on corporate issues. And this Matt Cartwright won by a landslide margin. Mm-hmm. Big, big primary victory.
Wow. So it was part of the environmental issue, fracking?
You betcha. Yeah. In fact, they refer to Tim Holden as Congressman Frack. And so, yes, fracking was an issue, and League of Conservation voters, other environmental groups, took a bold move. They split with the usual pattern of backing Democratic incumbents. They backed the challenger, Matt Cartwright. So, too, interestingly enough, did a few unions, particularly the postal workers, who made the point that Tim Holden had not been fighting hard to defend the U.S. Postal Service. And so they endorsed Matt Cartwright.
Yeah. So now the challenge, of course, is going to be now instead of two blue dog incumbent Democrats, we have one incumbent progressive Democrat and one brand new progressive Democrat who are going to be taking on Republicans in these districts. What are the odds of them winning?
Very, very good, because this is a result of redistricting. And what the Pennsylvania Republicans did, they had full control of the redistricting process. They drew Republican districts more Republican, Democratic districts more Democratic. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, both Matt Cartwright and Congressman Kritz are quite likely to win in November. And so bottom line is that the Pennsylvania delegation, at least as regards Democrats, is going to be a more progressive delegation.
That's great. Just a quick update on what's going on in Wisconsin, since that's your home state, John.
Yes.
What's the latest there?
Well, it's actually pretty big news. The Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with an analysis of all 50 states over the last year, which states had the best job creation records, the worst. Wisconsin had the worst record of job losses in the entire United States for the last year. That's created a huge stir in Wisconsin, and it's also directly tied to Governor Walker, because a huge part of that, of Wisconsin's statistically significant job decrease, is linked to the cuts in public sector workers.
Right. So as Governor Walker has been firing employees, government employees, mm-hmm. and nobody's been rushing in to start businesses in that state because the government employees don't even have money in their pockets to buy things anymore. Demand is falling. The economy's falling apart. And Scott Walker, no doubt, is running, you know, the Koch brothers are no doubt running ads on TV talking about how wonderful he is and how he's helping the economy.
Oh, yeah. They've been saying all year, last year and a half, that Walker's really kind of restarted the Wisconsin economy, caused a boom. It's incredibly bizarre, sort of Orwellian situation where, despite monthly reports of job losses, they're saying how great things are. Yeah. Well, this Bureau of Labor Statistics report puts the lie to all that. And it even notes that while Wisconsin's unemployment record has gone down, we have lower unemployment than we did a year ago. Part of that's tied to the fact that so many people have given up looking for work.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And so what's your prognosis on the vote? Because Walker was ahead for a while there.
Oh, yeah. And there's no question, $12 million in advertising gets you a lot of advantage. But the Wisconsin race is really starting to take shape. There's still a Democratic primary on May 8th. Mm-hmm. That'll choose an opponent for Walker. But stories like this one with the job losses really coming into focus, I think, give a tremendous benefit to whoever the Democratic nominee is. I think Walker can be beat.
And once there is a Democratic nominee, then there's a unified message going out against Walker.
It really is.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. John Nichols, TheNation.com. John, thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Tom.
Always great talking to you.
Good feelings for Louise.
Thank you. We'll pass it along. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. The student loan issue is a fascinating one. I got to tell you all about that. And the president's slow talking the news right after this.
We got to sweat, no doubt. Get the vote out. We got to howl, yell, raise a lot of hell. We got to educate and organize. Keep our eyes on the prize.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So here's the deal. The president did something some months ago, I think it was 6-8 months ago, that really, 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 really upset the Republicans. I mean, it really just totally made them crazy. And that was that, and Jacob, the volume in my ear, I'm not sure if our nonprofit volume going out is needs to be turned up because I can hardly hear myself in my own ear. Oh, it helps if I push the button. Never mind. I'm sorry. I had it turned off. The president did something that is just making people absolutely crazy, at least Republicans. And that is that, you know, through the Bush years, the Republicans had handed off student loans. Student loans started out with Sallie Mae. And, you know, this is a government agency, a student loan association. Sallie Mae stands for something that has something to do with student loans, right? The S is student loans. And Sallie Mae originally was lending directly to students. And then some Republican came along and said, why should Sallie Mae loan directly to students when they could loan to Bank of America? Bank of America could mark it up 5% and loan it to the students and make profit on it. I mean, this is the Republican way, right? If you've got something that's a public good and you can stick it to the working people and make more money for the banksters, then you do it. So throughout the Bush administration, they had this little gig here where the banks were able to charge whatever they damn well could, and they were backstopped by Sallie Mae. So these were no-risk loans, right? If somebody defaulted on the loans, the bank would go after them for, you know, for fees and bonuses and everything else that they could get. But if ultimately there was no money forthcoming, Sallie Mae would pay it off. So this was just like, this was, you know, honey for the banksters. I mean, it was as good as it gets. And so last year, the president said, yeah, this is nuts. We're spending tens of billions, with a B, tens of billions of dollars on profits for the banksters that should be going to student loans. So he just cut them out of the equation. Literally, just cut them out. So that's it. No more banksters. Sallie Mae is going to lend directly to the students. And as a consequence of this, Sallie Mae lending directly to the students, the interest rate goes to whatever Congress sets it at because it's a government agency. And they said, well, you know, Sallie Mae, you know, there are some, expenses associated with lending to students. Some student debts go bad. In fact, the ones for for-profit colleges go bad at about twice the rate of the ones that, you know, for state schools, for not-for-profit colleges. So basically what they, you know, so they've got to make a little bit of money. Sallie Mae can borrow from the Fed or from the Treasury Department. I mean, the Treasury Department's borrowing from the Fed at what, 0.1%, 0.2%? I mean, you know, really, really cheap. Right, the Fed's basically loaning money to the government for nothing. So Sallie Mae's cost of money is really low. It's probably well under 1% or well under 0.5%. But they do have some administrative costs, and they do have some losses that they've got to cover. So they said, okay, we can do this for about 3% and change. About where mortgages are right now. Mortgages are around 4%. Some of the soup-de-doop mortgages in the high 3%. So rather than students paying 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% interest rates through their friendly local, vulture bank, they're borrowing their money directly from Sallie Mae now, I don't think that there should be student loans at all. I think that college should be free. Let me just be on the record. But this is how it is. So the president cut the corporations out of this, and we had a guest on this show at the time that this happened. This was sometime last fall, as I recall. And he was just going all hysterical about how this was going to be the end of the world as we know it. And the government never does anything right. And the students weren't going to get their money on time. And the colleges weren't going to get their money on time. And it was going to make the debt bigger. And, all the Republican talking points. Well, as usual, they were all lies. And the loans, the government backed loans to students have been just fine, and they've been able to, with that 3% or more, they've been able to cover their losses, cover their administrative costs, and all that kind of thing. But Congress, when Congress authorized this, they only authorized it over the short term. So come, I believe it's July 1st, you know, in a month or so, that student loan rate is going to double. And the president is saying, please don't let it double. We don't need it to double. And the Republicans are saying, oh, but if it doubles, then student loans become profitable again, just like they were for the banks. Only this time we can use that profit to pay down the national debt or to give more tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. Now, of course, what they're really saying is that once that interest rate is up around 6 or 7%, that's where the banks can loan and be profitable. And so what the heck? Let's just bring the banks in. That's their long-term strategy. So here was the president last night on the Jimmy Fallon show. Clip number one, Jacob.
On July 1st of this year, the interest rates on Stanford student loans, the same loans that many of you use to help pay for college, are set to double. That means some hardworking students will be paying about $1,000 extra just to get their education. So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening. What we said is simple. Now is not the time to make school more expensive for our young people.
Oh, yeah.
That's the President of the United States. And so, you know, on MSNBC, Chuck Todd asked Connie Mack, the Republican from Florida, well, what do you think? Are the Republicans going to vote to keep that student loan rate low? Or are they going to try and jack it up so that they can open a door for the banksters to come back in and make some money on it? You are going to be fascinated to hear this guy. After this break, stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And once again, your thanks very much for your thoughts and your prayers for Louise. She sends her love to everybody. She's recovering really rapidly and feeling much better.
Yeah, it's overdue, I think, don't you? It's the debt forgiveness jubilee. Yeah, I realized one day I'd paid 20 times more than the cost of that computer that I bought at the store. And that was just interest. It never would end. Too late to just remember not to do that again. I thought we threw the money lenders out of the temple. Thought usury was a crime, stated clearly and simple. Well, it's cut up them credit cards. It's a debt forgiveness jubilee.
There you go. Jim Turr and Blue Canyon Satire, Blue Canyon Productions. Some great music. The Occupy movement all across the country is out there in many, many places pointing out that this is nuts. That people are graduating from college tens of thousands of dollars in debt. This is the first time this has ever happened in the history of America. Well, of course, it's the first time in the history of America we've ever had Reaganomics putting predatory banksters in charge of our economy. But anyhow, so today is a national day of action for the Occupy movement, or for many people within the Occupy movement. And good on them, all about this student debt crisis. So you heard the president before the break talking about how he wants to he wants Congress to act to so that the student interest doesn't go up as it automatically will on July 1st. Here's clip number two of the president on the Jimmy Fallon show talking about this.
Now, there's some in Congress who disagree.
Republicans.
They say keeping the interest rate low isn't the way to help our students. They say we should be doing everything we can to pay down the national debt.
Right.
Well, so long as it doesn't include taxing billionaires. But their position is that students just have to make this rate increase work. Frankly, I don't buy it.
The Barackness monster ain't buying.
Yeah, so here's what Mitt Romney had to say about student loans and keeping the rates low. This is clip number eight, Jacob.
I think young voters in this country have to vote for me if they're really thinking about what's in the best interest of the country and what's in their personal best interest.
All right. Did I hear him say keep those student loan rates low? Let's see, clip nine. Let's try. Ask him again.
When you look at 50% of the kids coming out of college today can't find a job or can't find a job which is consistent with their skills, how in the world can you be supporting a president that's led to that kind of an economy?
Oh, but he does want to keep student loan rates low. Do you, clip number 10?
I think this is a time when young people are questioning the support they gave to President Obama 3.5 years ago. He promised bringing the country together. That sure hasn't happened. Young people recognize that, and I think that's why they're going to increasingly look for a different approach.
Yeah, okay, so I didn't hear anything about that from him. Back to the president, clip number three about student loans, back again on Jimmy Fallon's show.
The reason it's so important to keep down costs is so we keep college affordable.
And the president knows his stuff, y'all. That's why they call him the POTUS, which means person on top. What is it?
Jimmy, POTUS stands for President of the United States.
He's the POTUS with the most.
Yeah, be careful there. You'll have Rick Santorum. Anyhow, so Chuck Todd says, okay, well, let's ask a Republican. You know, Romney's not saying anything about this. Romney, since, by the way, has come out and said that he's in favor of keeping the student loan rates low, so to give him credit. But anyhow, here's Connie Mack. He's the Connie Mack the Fourth, the Republican from Florida, and Chuck Todd trying to pin him down. How are you going to vote on this thing? Are you going to vote to keep these student loan rates low?
Mitt Romney and President Obama are both endorsing essentially this plan that would not allow student loan interest rates to double by the summer. Where are you on this?
Well, look, again, I think what's happening in the state of Florida, if you don't mind, Chuck, I want to talk about what's happening here in the state of Florida.
No, I understand that, but this is the vote you're going to have to make in Congress.
Wait. All right, but you got to cast a vote on this issue about student loans. What vote are you going to cast?
When the vote comes up, we'll cast that vote. But I'm telling you, as people who are watching your program today, what they're concerned about is jobs and the economy and how we're going to balance a budget.
You don't think anybody's concerned about their student loan
interest rate?
We will absolutely be able to cast a vote, and when that happens, we'll be happy to do so.
We will be happy to cast a vote. What's that vote going to be? I ain't going to tell you. No. Because the banksters, I guarantee you, I have not seen the numbers, but Connie Mack would not be making that kind of a fool of himself on national television if he wasn't getting big bucks through the back door from the banksters. Clip number four of the president here on the Jimmy Fallon show.
If college goes fine, go ahead, financial blues. And that is how we slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There we go. So now the president is getting all kinds of flack on Fox News today for slow jamming the news. How dare he do something that might be young and hip and cool and, you can't have that. Steve Ducey's just all hysterical about that. And, in fact, Steve Ducey, he's hysterical about a lot of things. The president last week, I played this clip Thursday or Friday, I think, of the president saying that, he was talking about him and Michelle. He was talking before a junior college, a community college, a two-year college, about how they weren't born a silver spoon in their mouth. Somebody gave them a leg up. In fact, here's his actual words. This is clip number 12, Jacob.
We created a foundation for those of us to prosper. Somebody gave me an education. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Michelle wasn't. But somebody gave us a chance.
See, he actually got scholarships. Somebody gave him a chance, okay? So here's what Steve Ducey turns this into on Fox so-called news, clip 11.
He said, unlike some people, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
Unlike some people? Oh, isn't that cute? And so Stephen Colbert, God bless him. Stephen Colbert is so cool. Here's what he had to say about... Well, he didn't say it was Steve Ducey, but I think that we can draw that inference.
So excellent reporting, Steve Ducey, and I know good reporting. I am an independent newsman, not some smug, self-satisfied brown noser toadying to the Republican establishment, unlike some people.
Unlike some people. So anyway, there's more. We'll get into that as time goes on. But let me pick up some of your calls here. David in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just got done watching Obama's speech on student loan and education in general, and I totally agree that education across the board, elementary all the way through grad school of all places, should be free, and no one should have to go into any type of debt to have an education or to get health care or anything. And on top of that, I mean, it's not only the biggest debt in the country, student loan debt, but I was talking to my parents the other day and my grandparents, and they all equally said that throughout the 40s, 50s, 60s, and most of the 70s, you could either work your way through college, or that individual or their family could save up money to spend for a child's college education. Like, it was a time in which you could save up for big purchases, whether it was an education.
College wasn't even a big purchase until Ronald Reagan became president. I'm old enough to remember this. I've said this 1,000 times. Louise worked her way through college working as a part-time waitress at Howard Johnson's for $2 an hour plus tips.
Yep, exactly.
And she wasn't
exactly
alone.
Right.
That was the norm. That was back in the late 60s and the early 70s.
Yep. And you're not the only one who says it all began with Reagan. And then one quick point, and I'll drop off the line because there's other callers. But, the whole thing about having an affordable education, it's not a new idea, and it's something that people should all agree with. And I do remember some good gentleman in the past who formed the University of Virginia in the attempt to get education for as many people as possible.
Yep.
So this whole idea of affordable education is nothing new.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, that's in fact, it's one of the three things on his tombstone that don't include his being president. He thought this was more important, that he was the founder of the University of Virginia, a free college. David, thank you very much for the call. Very well said. And here's an exercise for all of you. Just think about this for a minute. First of all, we all agree, even libertarians agree, even the crazies agree that one of the purposes of government is to have a certain level of infrastructure. Now, libertarians just want military infrastructure and our court system and our jails. But even that's infrastructure, right? Look around you right now. Just look around you. What do you see? You're driving in your car. You might see the windshield. You might see the dashboard. You might see the buildings outside. You're sitting in your living room. You see the walls. You see the TV. You see the radio. I'm sitting here looking at, there's a microphone in front of me. I'm looking at a camera that's pointed at me. I'm looking at the lights around me. I'm looking into the next room, and there's Jacob sitting there with a pair of headphones on behind this giant board. Now, let me ask you a really simple question. Notice all the stuff you're looking at. Are you looking at anything that didn't originate as an idea in somebody's mind? Now, possibly if you're outside and you're looking at the trees and the grass and the clouds, you are looking at something that wasn't man-made. But if you're looking at anything man-made, human-made, you are looking at something that was made because somebody had an idea, somebody had an education, somebody knew the math, somebody knew how to put it together and design it. So what is our most important infrastructure? Our intellectual infrastructure, which enabled all of those things to exist. That camera I'm looking at would not exist if somebody hadn't had a good education. Education should be free.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, student loans, keep them low. Yes, absolutely. But let's go the next step. Free college education for anybody who can do it.
I do my best and play by the rules. I bend a couple, even break a few. Don't get me wrong, I want to do it right. I just can't seem to live.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike in D.C. over at the Supreme Court. Hey, Mike, what's going on there?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm with the group of DAPs. You probably saw the headlines that we made on Monday when Noah Wiley got arrested with us.
Mm-hmm.
Disability rights group in Washington, D.C. We're just finishing up our third day of protest here. We just finished doing a mock trial where we had 9 of our people dressed as justices in front of the Supreme Court to show our support for the Affordable Care Act, because there's a provision in it called the Community Choice Option, which would allow states to spend money keeping people out of nursing homes and supporting them in their homes, which is what our group is all about.
Right.
So that was the final thing that we did. We started the week with Noah getting arrested with us and because we were protesting Paul Ryan's budget. And then And then we were here yesterday also and on Capitol Hill yesterday, and here we are again today.
That is absolutely great. And so you are telling the Supreme Court, please don't knock down the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, because there's like really important stuff in there that, will keep people alive.
I mean, yeah, and you have to look closely, and the media doesn't always look closely at it.
Yeah, it is. Good on you, Mike. Please give my very, very best to everybody out there, over there, would you please?
All right, thank you, Tom.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. Great to hear from you. I mean, this is really important. Consider the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, says that, starting next year or the year and a half from now, and already for little kids, for young people, not just little kids, but for young people, the insurance companies can't kick you off because you get quite sick and expensive or because you have a pre-existing condition. Louise, my wife, just went through breast cancer surgery. The health insurance company could and still may kick her off. I mean, who knows? They might just say, too expensive, you're gone. And they do that to people routinely. This is what President Obama's mother died of, remember? And because she got care too late. Fortunately, knock on wood, Louise got care early enough. But then, say we change insurance companies. They're going to say, we're not going to cover you for that. I mean, this is so important. What's going on? Hey, I'm going to stop using Louise as an example. I shouldn't do that. But you get the story. You get the point. David in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950 KTNF. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I kind of want to discuss how the Republicans are framed. They're doing a wonderful, masterful job again of spinning this student loan debate, Tom, and I'm going to make it analogous to what was going on with the healthcare debate. So instead of discussing having intelligent, debate about how we can improve our systems, we are mucked down in the mud here talking about student loans and things like that. And so that prevents any, with the media coverage and everything else, it prevents any intellectual discussion about how we can actually reform our system to provide health care or education and clean water or other, parts of our commons that, many of us don't have access to, Tom.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, here's what Rush Limbaugh had to say about all of this. Clip number six, Jacob, first of all.
Sandra Fluck just tweeted, "Don't double my rate. Many students will see the interest rate on federal student loans increase if Congress doesn't act by July 1st. That's an exact tweet from Sandra Fluck. Obama just said the exact same thing, word for word, to the students at University of North Carolina. Sandra Fluck is just seeing a poor, isolated, alone little college student worried about her contraception. But now she's represented by the flacks in the White House, Hillary Rosen, Lena Dunn, and they're coordinating with Obama, scaring students about the interest rates on their student loans."
Yes, scaring students that the Republicans want to raise, In fact, here's the second Limbaugh clip on this.
"As a reelection ploy to get the youth vote, he'll do something to wipe out student loan debt, forgive it, or whatever, saying it's unconscionable it should ever happen. You wait. He's president. He can do that. That's one of the things we're up against."
It's absolutely, absolutely incredible. Did we have a guest at the top of this hour? Looking at the one sheet here, I'm sorry, I didn't have a print. Oh, we're out of time? Okay. We will get Ed back on. That's what Limbaugh had to say, and it's absolutely bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. And, we have 2 minutes? Oh, we could have put a guest on with 2 minutes. Okay. Anyhow, we'll come back to your calls here. Ken in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Regarding the matter of student loans and free education, we just had visitors from Sweden for a week. And he told me, it's a small country. We need to compete with Germany, France, and so on. He said, our citizens are an important asset, not a liability, and everyone must have access to a good education to maximize their use to society. I don't see why that shouldn't apply to a large country as well as a small one.
It applies to every country. As I said, look around you. Everything you see was made by somebody's, by somebody's mind originally. And if it is at all well designed, it was a mind that was well educated. And so, you want to say our bridges are our infrastructure. Of course they are. But you're not going to have a bridge without somebody designing it. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have a building without somebody designing it. You're not going to have any of these things. You're not going to have electric lights without somebody studying electrical engineering. You're not going to you're not going to have plumbing without somebody studying how water flows and how copper interacts with it. I mean, it's just it goes on and on and on. The most important infrastructure, because it precedes all other infrastructure, is our intellectual infrastructure. And for the Republicans to say, to hell with our intellectual infrastructure, we think it's a wonderful thing that there is $1 trillion in student debt, more than ever before in the history of the world. You know, I mean, we're the only country with this kind of debt. We're the only country that has insane Republicans running the show. We're the only country with Reaganomics. Before Ronald Reagan, before it came president, pretty much anybody in America could go to college. It's why we had such a large middle class. And if you didn't want to go to college or you weren't well suited for college, you could get a decent job in a decent factory and still put your kids through school. And it's like, it is so sad what Reaganomics has done to this country. It is so sad. Ken, thanks so much for the call. And anyhow, we'll be back. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around, 57 minutes past the hour. Your opportunity now to listen to the news and also to support our program. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Zed Jelani is on the line with us. He is a reporter with the United Republic's Republic Report. Republic Report. .org is the website, and they are doing just some spectacular investigative reporting. Zed, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, great to be here, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Always great to have you with us. I found this absolutely mind-boggling that there are lobbyists who are working on behalf of enhancing the ability of private corporations to spy on us, and that a private corporation is paying these lobbyists to do this. Do I have this right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so the bill that's going to basically expand the government spying powers and the ability of private corporations to share your private information is called the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, or CISPA. We saw a couple months ago the Stop Online Piracy Act, which was SOPA, would go down in flames when the internet community plus the big tech companies decided that they would go up against the big Hollywood companies pushing this bill that would basically let the government or private firms also request your website to be shut down if they had any private information. The way that this bill is different is that it's more about information sharing. So let's say like a big tech company, like let's say you have like a Gmail account. Let's say that this company gets a request from a private security firm or for the government saying that you're doing something in your email that counts as a cybersecurity threat. And that's very broadly defined. They can share that information on you, never let you know that you did it, and have no legal obstacle or any legal liability for doing that. And they can do that for virtually any reason under this bill.
Does that mean things like reading your emails?
Yeah, exactly. Your email, so your bank or credit information, let's say you have like an anonymous account where you leave comments on some website, you know, any sort of information basically that you would consider to be private would then be able to be shared between private security firms or the private corporations that are doing the servicing and also the government.
So if I'm an employer and I want to know if my employee Paul is flirting an email with my employee Jim, I can just ask some private security company to hack into their email and share that information with me, and under this piece of legislation, that would be legal?
As long as they can define it as a cybersecurity threat. And like I said, this is barely defined within the bill. I mean, there are a lot of people concerned that it'll do something similar to what SOPA was going to do, to where if they even think you're violating intellectual property, right, whether, you know, you're watching.
So if I think that Paul has sent a picture of somebody he shouldn't. Let's say that I think that Paul sent a picture of you that was copyrighted to Jim, then bang, I have basis to have him nailed. And he would never know about it.
No, he would never know about it. And if he wanted to later bring up a lawsuit and say that, you know, this company shouldn't have been sharing the private information, I wasn't even in any way a cybersecurity threat, you know, he couldn't do that because everyone would be immunized under this legislation.
Amazing. Poor Paul, he's answering the phone right now. He doesn't know we're talking about him. Jacob keeps looking over to see if there's a horrified look on his face. There isn't. In any case, the SOPA and PIPA went down in flames because, I mean, all of us in the netroots and the grassroots claimed it as a victory, but I'm a little more skeptical. I believe that it went down in flames because Google opposed it. It was basically Google versus Sony, and you know, YouTube and whatnot versus Sony, and so therefore it didn't go through. In this piece of legislation, you have the Sonys of the world and the Facebooks and the Googles of the world all on the same side of it, or at least, you know, I'm not making that as an assertion. I'm asking. Would they all be on the same side of it? Because ultimately, big corporations like to share information with each other.
No, I mean, they absolutely are all on the same side, and that's what's so scary. You know, with SOPA, you had big companies like Facebook and Google actively protesting legislation. I mean, they had a day where Google was blacked out and everyone could click an email to a member of Congress against legislation. You know, probably millions of people quickly learned about the legislation and took action to stop it. And it's a totally different case in this scenario, because with SOPA, basically, they were charging companies like Facebook and Google to police themselves against piracy, but this isn't actually going to cost those companies anything, so a lot of them are actually supporting it. Facebook, for example, hired a firm, a lobbying firm, Pierce, Isakowitz, and Blaylock, and they have about a little more than half a dozen lobbyists working on the bill. Almost every single one of them was actually in the government at one point or another. They're all, you know, sort of members of the revolving door. They either worked for members of Congress or they worked for a White House. And they're all lobbying very intensely to get the bill through Congress. I mean, they're expected to probably get a vote on it this week, and it's actually working its way through the Rules Committee today. Although one bit of very positive news that happened today was that the White House actually issued a formal veto threat if the bill shows up in its current form on Obama's desk, because it said that it just sort of tips the line between sort of our safety and security and civil liberty. It just simply goes too far. So that's a very positive note on that end.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is basically all about corporations being able to spy on us, is it not?
No, I mean, that's exactly what it is. And I think one of the most key points in the White House's statement was that they're saying that they're treating cybersecurity as sort of a national security issue and taking it out of the realm of sort of the civilian realm. You know, it's always been policy that, like, cybersecurity threats, you can deal with them like the Department of Justice, but this is almost treating it in sort of like a military fashion, right, whereas, you know, if you're labeled a cybersecurity threat, your information can be shared with the NSA, even if you're, you know, at the end of the day, completely harmless.
But if I have this right, if Google decides I'm a cybersecurity threat and they ask, Google owns Gmail, they own YouTube. If they ask Facebook for some information and Facebook shares that information with Google and there's no government agency involved at all, is that legal under this bill?
From my understanding of it, yes, it is, because it allows private firms, security agencies, and government to share this information, you know, freely and discreetly. You'll never know about it, and of course, legally, you have no legal recourse either.
Wow. In other words, it is literally the death of any small remnant of privacy we may have left on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as they can define you in some way as violating cybersecurity, which is as broad as you know, can be, and it won't necessarily even have to be malicious. I mean, the internet is a constantly evolving technology, and sometimes it's really difficult to know whether someone's hacking or whether they're actually just sharing a file they own or using some sort of innovative social media or whatnot.
Right, and if I take a picture on my camera, how are they to know whether it's copyright or not? They'll still examine it to determine. Or if there was I get emails all the time that have photos embedded in them that I'm sure are in violation of copyright. It's, you know, people grab some picture someplace and it just kind of, they send it out virally to everybody. And since I received it, even though I didn't send it, arguably I'm in violation of the law by being in possession of it. And so all of a sudden, my internet service provider, you know, the mail provider, the everybody involved is all welcome to talk to each other and share all they want about me, right?
No, I mean, that's absolutely correct.
Well, you start out by saying no, but you meant yes, right?
What I want to say is that the internet really, I think, is, you know, it's an amazing frontier for people to share information, to sort of innovate and have new ideas. But really, I think what we're seeing, this is the CISPA, SOPA, all this, really, it's a new way to attack Americans' privacy. I mean, we saw this when telephones came out. Obviously, we had to set the FISA court to handle sort of security with respect to how government spies on you on the telephone. And I think now we're seeing this on the internet. And I think the big difference between the two cases is we have many, many companies that can access the information. Basically, you could never, if you're talking about, you know, sending letters or being on the telephone or on the internet, you have all your information out there. So this sort of threat, I think, to America's privacy is it's never before seen.
Yes. And I will say yes, not no, but yes.
Yes.
Zed Jelani, republicreport.org. Check it out. The story's all right there. Zed, thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is mind-boggling. This is mind-boggling. I mean, the Fourth Amendment doesn't even apply because that only protects you against the government. This is the corporate state.
Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching.
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Joan, listening on WWRL in New York City. Hey, Joan, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm glad your wife is feeling better. My best wishes to her for rapid recovery. And I just wanted to agree with you about the need for free university education. You know, I used to listen to Sean Hannity once in a while when he did his local show. And he had a man call in who was a law student and who was getting funding from the federal government for his education. And Sean would always say to him in his very dramatic way, why should the government put a gun to my head and take money out of my pocket to pay for your education? And I always wanted to call Sean Hannity up and ask him if he was glad that his children, he has small children, that his children would never have to worry about getting polio. And the reason his children never have to worry getting polio is that Jonas Salk, the inventor of the Salk vaccine, was educated at City University of New York absolutely free. There was a time in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s when City University of New York was absolutely free. Anybody in the New York City high schools with a grade average of 85-plus had the right to go for free to City University for 4 years. And that's where Jonas Salk got his education. And I always wanted to ask Sean if he thought that the citizens of New York would rather have their money back for that education or would they rather have the Salk vaccine?
This is why the whole libertarian philosophy is stupid.
Apart. They don't understand? They don't understand that your college degree doesn't just benefit you. It benefits the whole society. I don't know why they don't get this. Maybe it's that they're so selfish that all they think of is themselves. So they think that everybody goes to school just to get a degree and make a lot of money for themselves. But a lot of people go to school and get a degree and give something fabulous back to all of us, like a vaccine that prevents future illness in future generations.
And it may not be something as dramatic as that. As I said earlier, look around you. Everything you see
right.
was made, originated as an idea in somebody's mind,
right.
and
exactly.
went from that idea in their mind. I mean, the cardboard box I'm looking at.
It could be a symphony that somebody writes that changes your life, or a book that they write that changes your life, or a poem that you
it
love.
It could be this piece of paper in my hand.
Exactly.
Somebody had to come up with a way to bleach that wood pulp and how to
exactly.
run it through the machine. Somebody had
mm-hmm.
to design the machines.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had to design the chainsaw. Somebody had, I mean, you know, over and over.
Right.
There's a million little things that went
right.
into that, and every one of them required an education.
And, right, and we all benefit from
yes.
all of our education.
Yes, it is it because it is the first infrastructure. Our educational infrastructure is our first infrastructure. That's why Thomas Jefferson worked so hard to create the University of Virginia as a free college, and why the University of California system, back you talk about the 40s, 50s, 60s, City University of New York was free. So was a college in California until
mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan came
mm-hmm.
along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this idea that, I got in my head. Come on. It's because it's exactly. It's because you're a member of society. You're going to benefit from it. Jones, so well said. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Very, very well said. Ann in Chicago. Hey, Ann. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hi. Blessings to you and Louise and the family. And,
thank you.
I wanted you to elaborate on Holland's economy. I got your say plus what I got waiting for the call to go through. Mm-hmm. And I'd like you to tell me more about it.
I don't know a great deal more about it other than that there was the banksters basically said to Holland, as they have to so many other countries, you have to do this austerity thing. You got to basically have your own Paul Ryan budget. You've got to lay off public workers and cut benefits to people and like that. And the Dutch parliament refused to do it. And so much like the Icelandic did, except that Holland, I'm pretty sure, is using the euro. So they're, I know that they're part of the EU. And so there's a bit of an impasse there right now. And in fact, I'm going to ask Sean Taylor, our producer, if she can track down somebody who knows more about that than I do, because I just know the cursory stuff. I just know what I read in the news, and it would be fascinating to find out the story behind the story. Thank you for provoking my curiosity on that and for the call. I appreciate it. We will find out. We will find out. Hack in, got to push the button. Hack in Springfield, Illinois. Hey, Hack, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Actually, I'm driving through Springfield, but I am an Oklahoma resident. I just got off the phone with my congressman, Congressman James Lankford, Oklahoma 5th,
mm-hmm.
and he intends to vote yes on CISPA.
This is on keeping the student loan rates low?
No. CISPA is the law where employers could require your password.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Okay, so he intends to vote. Now, does a yes vote mean...
Yes.
A yes vote means that your internet company can read your emails and snoop on you, and they can pass it along to your whoever pays them.
Your boss. Yeah.
Your boss, your ex-wife, your brother-in-law, your prospective son-in-law. I mean, whatever, maybe.
Your spammer in Uzbekistan.
Yes, exactly. So he intends to vote yes on that. He intends to give away our internet privacy. Your member of Congress. Is he a Republican or a Democrat?
This is Oklahoma, Tom. He's a Republican.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Stupid question.
yes, indeed, but
you would think Republicans would be in favor of privacy. They keep claiming that they're the party of the Constitution. Hasn't he read the Fourth Amendment? Well, actually, the Fourth Amendment only protects you from the government. I guess he doesn't care if it's privacy from a big corporation or even a little corporation or the stalker down the street. You know,
I was also informed that the House and Senate versions of CISPA differ slightly in that where the House version would make it optional. The Senate version of CISPA would make it mandatory.
Make what mandatory?
That employers could require your passwords.
Oh, my. Hack, thanks a lot for the call, I think.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's definitely worth the call to Congress. Check out callcongress.org and ask your member of Congress, do you support CISPA or not? Are you going to give away our privacy? Are you with us or against us?
When I hear the music play and I hear the children sing, I know together anything is possible. Time won't slip away, we'll get through all that life can bring, and I know together anything is possible.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, Orly in Waterford, New Jersey. Hey, Orly, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Yes, Tom. I just had a question about the CISPA Act there.
Right.
If, say, somebody is freaked out enough to cancel their internet at their house and they only use internet access at the library, would this law also pertain to anybody who goes to the library in order to access their
If you go to the library like and you log on to your email account and... Yeah. You know, your nosy neighbor wants to and has enough money to pay a corporation, wants to know what you're doing in your email account. Yeah, all they have to do is, is, you know, find out that you're using Hotmail or Gmail or whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Pertain to the provider itself. It's just as long as.
Well, apparently not. I mean, I'm not an expert on this law, first of all.
Uh-huh.
I may be wrong, but my understanding is that basically any information that they have that may have to do with cybersecurity, which can be very, very broadly construed. Which can even include copyright law. In other words, anything, you know. Oh, there's five words in there that Shakespeare might have used. That's a violation of the, you know, Shakespeare is out of copyright, but five words there that appeared in today's New York Times. I mean, they can always find an excuse. You know, this is just crummy legislation. This is legislation.
That's very true.
You know, and the fact that Facebook has a bunch of lobbyists. They've hired a big high powered lobbying firm, and they got a bunch of lobbyists here in Washington D.C. who are going around and hustling politicians should say a lot. And I'm horrified by it. Orly, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate the call. Mike in Los Angeles, Long Island, excuse me. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I just want to say good job, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm just a little concerned, actually. You know, I can understand why somebody like a Mitt Romney or a Paul Ryan, they act the way they act. They try to pass bills accordingly the way they feel, or the hard right Republicans, because they're getting the corporate kickbacks. What I don't understand is the average middle class Americans that vote for them, actually voting against their own interests, voting against unions. I speak to them. I spoke to one yesterday. They're kids. One is a policeman, one's a fireman, and they don't know that they're actually voting against their own children. And
right.
When they say they're against unions, I ask them, why are you against unions? Because your children are unions, union people.
Yeah.
And they look at you like the RCA dog, you know, their head turns sideways, and they don't get it. They just
Mike,
don't get it.
Do you have a bunch of friends that drink beer?
Sure, of course.
What's their favorite brand?
Oh, Heineken.
Okay. Why is that?
Nothing.
Millions of dollars worth of advertising.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Millions of dollars worth of advertising. Product placement. They pay extra to have it placed at eye level. They advertise like crazy. They run very sophisticated ads. They've got, you know, everything from bus stops. That's the reason I ask you that question is because that's why the average person is voting against their own self-interest. Because the billionaires who are screwing them are spending millions and billions of dollars on advertising. And it's not advertising that says if you vote for Mitt Romney, he's gonna raise, or, you know, Ron, let's take it, let's not even be proactive. Let's look at the past. Ronald Reagan doubled the taxes on working people making less than $30,000 a year and cut by fivefold, you know, cut from 74% down to 28%, almost fivefold, the taxes by a quarter to a quarter, the taxes on millionaires and billionaires. Now, do you think that that his ads said that when he was running for president?
Well, of course not.
No, of course not. Or when he was running for reelection. No, of course they didn't. And neither did any of the Republicans who were running with him. Instead, they lied or they told selective truths. And mm-hmm. when you've got the average person, I mean, you said most of your friends drink Heineken. I lived in Germany where beer is like an art form, okay? Yeah, every
right.
town has its own beer. I lived near Kulmbach, and Kulmbacher beer, they make five different beers there, or they did at the time that I lived there. And you get to know, you know, every town's beer and all the nuance, and this is a lot of hops, and this is a lot of barley and malt and whatnot. And you learn all the subtleties. And, of course, they advertise that stuff. But the bottom line is that I'll bet in a blind taste test, all your buddies couldn't tell the difference between Heineken and Beck's, for example, or a half a dozen other European type beers, you know, beers that are high in hops. They have no idea. They're buying it because that ad has caused a positive association in their mind with it. They've seen those ads enough times that they think, okay, this is the one that I should drink because it makes me feel like I'm me. There's a sense of identity associated with that. The Republicans have done that. Well, the Democrats have too, but they haven't spent the kind of money that the Republicans have in particular because they haven't. Yeah. You know, the Democrats tend to think, and, you know, to their credit and to their detriment, they tend to think that if they tell the truth on issues, people will go, oh, so that's how it is. I guess I'll vote that way. And the Republicans get that because they're lying about things, because they intend to privatize Social Security and turn it over to the banksters, because they intend to take Medicare and Medicaid and turn it over to the bank, the banksters who run the health insurance companies, because they intend to end the unemployment programs, because the list goes on and on, because they're opposed to child labor laws, because they want to end public education, because they want to make sure that the for-profit loan industry can make another $1 trillion on student loans, because they want the employers to be able to get your password on Facebook and know all about you. You know, fill in the blank, right? They've got to lie to win elections, and so they spend a lot of money on their advertising. And that advertising is very, very sophisticated, and it is brand advertising. It's not issue advertising. It's not detail advertising. It's brand advertising. It's the kind of advertising where you look at it and you think, Reagan, morning in America, right? You know, standing tall, right? Standing on the saddle, right?
Yep.
And so in answer to your question, why does the middle class vote against their own self-interest? Because of millions and cumulatively trillions, but certainly in this election cycle, it's going to be billions, millions and billions of dollars. And over the last 40, 50 years, that has very much been the case. And you combine that with the fact that just like your friends who are drinking Heineken don't have the time to sit around and say, okay, what's a Kulmbacher beer? You know, because I can tell you, Kulmbach makes some really incredible beer that's a hell of a lot better than Heineken. But you've got to find it, right? It's hard to find in the United States. You may even have to import it. And they're not going to sit around and do all that kind of homework, just like because they got jobs, right? They got families. They want to watch a show on TV. There's a great movie coming up.
They don't have time, and they're stressed out.
That's right. And those are the same reasons why they watch these ads that are put on by the Tea Party, and they go, oh, my God, we've got a national debt we got to do something about. Right?
This has been going on for years. We have to concentrate on doing exactly what you said, showing people what they're really voting for.
There you go.
Something.
We got to do it. There you go.
Exactly.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to WWRL. Neil, watch us on Free Speech TV in Smartville, California on Dish Network. Hey, Neil, what's up?
Oh, hi. I hope your wife gets well.
Thank you. She is.
Yeah. I don't hear much talk about balanced budget issues on your program, and I just think that's an extremely important issue, whether you're Democrat, Republican. You know, if you don't have, it's nice to have all these programs, free education, free medical, you know, free unemployment insurance, free everything.
Neil, but can you describe for me, or can you name for me, 1 year in the United States when we had no budget deficit, no debt?
Well, what I'm not advocating that there ever was one.
Starting with the George Washington administration, to have a budget debt. There has to be a debt. If the United States does not have debt, the United States cannot sell treasuries. And treasuries are essential for commerce. U.S. debt is one of the most important things that we produce because it allows people to invest with safety. There is no reason to be hysterical about the budget debt or deficit. And all this talk about, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have free programs? Nobody's talking about free programs. You pay for programs. Of course you pay for programs. Now, during times of crisis, as Eisenhower pointed out, I mean, Eisenhower came into office with over 100% debt to GDP ratio. Eisenhower, the Republican, after World War II. And what did he do? He borrowed money to build a national highway system that so jump-started commerce that the added taxes paid off the cost of World War II. And World War II was one hell of an expensive war. Eisenhower paid it off, the Republican. And he did it by doing the exact opposite of what these Republicans are talking about. Don't buy that stuff. Don't buy that stuff. It's toxic. Catherine in Irvine, New York. Catherine, we have just a minute to the break. What's up? Catherine? No, Catherine. Okay. Let's see here. In Seattle, David. Hey, David, you got a quick one?
No, it's not a quick one, but I'm calling in about the student loan thing. You there?
I'm listening.
Oh, okay. My point is that Sallie Mae doesn't need loan loss buffer guarantees on loans that are guaranteed by the U.S. government because they're not at risk.
Right.
And furthermore, federally guaranteed student loans don't go away if the borrower declares bankruptcy. And I know this from my own personal experience.
Yes, that was the modification of the bankruptcy law 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Yeah. So, and you're right, Sallie Mae doesn't need a backstop, but under the rules that Congress put together authorizing Sallie Mae, Sallie Mae can't go out and ask for handouts. Sallie Mae does have to provide for a loan loss ratio, as it were. So it's just, you know, it's the way the law is constructed.
They ought to have something, but it should be reasonable.
I agree. And frankly, I think, you know, if you're going to have student loans and you're going to have the government paying for student loans and the government can borrow money from the Fed at a tenth of a point, make the student loans 1%. Thanks a lot, David, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
That said, of course, the Republicans want to let this bill not be renewed and have student loans go up to 6% and change, because they think that's just so great.
Counting on you to turn me around instead of clowning around. Let's look for some common ground. So, baby, time's getting a little crazy. I've been getting a little lazy.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And live in the studio with us is Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, your charity for what's going on in South Sudan, which is going through a rough time now,
South Sudan is going a rough time. And actually, tomorrow I'm going to try and slip in here right after there's a hearing on Capitol Hill about South Sudan and Sudan that I'll be going to.
Oh, and you'll tell us about it.
Oh, I'll give you the
good.
Blow by blow.
So I understand that you have Marco Rubio News and you have Supreme Court news.
That's right. So the Supreme Court case was this morning. There were four provisions at stake. One was the law requires state officers to determine a suspected immigrant citizenship status, allows an officer to arrest or detain those they believe are in the country illegally, criminalizes failing to register immigration status with the government, and criminalizes unlawfully looking for work.
Now, is that the SB 70? Is that the Arizona law?
That's the Arizona law.
That apparently came out of ALEC because it's popping up in other states already.
Right. Yeah. Paul Clement said that the state law was a benign form of assistance to the United States government. The Solicitor General Verrilli said that it requires state officers to check each suspect's citizenship status. It creates a situation where the government's priorities could actually take a back seat to a state's priorities, which of course federal law always comes out on top. The liberal and conservative judges reacted pretty skeptically. Judge Sotomayor said, "You can see it's not selling very well."
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, Elena Kagan recused herself from this, so don't know where that's going to happen.
So they only need a four vote.
Right.
Well, four would be a tie. Before the Supreme Court, a tie means no, doesn't it?
A tie means it goes back to whatever the lower court.
It goes back down. So it's the equivalent of no decision. Yeah.
It's equivalent of no decision. Yeah. And Verrilli said the law was not intended to boost federal efforts, but was instead aimed at promoting attrition of illegal immigrants, a goal that could force other states to take illegal immigrants from Arizona. So in other words, they're saying it could just move from state to state. It's not necessarily going to change the overall picture.
Wow. So the good news, if there's good news out of this, is that the initial response of the justices was that this Senate Bill 1070 in Arizona and its children or brothers and sisters or whatever around the country may be deemed unconstitutional.
No.
I have that backwards.
Yes, you have it backwards.
Oh.
The conventional wisdom is that at least the first two provisions, the state offices to determine a suspected immigrant citizenship status and those and an ability to detain people they believe are here illegally, which the Solicitor General said could be huge, you know, how are they ever going to incarcerate all those people. Those two provisions may stand.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Okay, what did Marco Rubio have to say?
Well, you know, they're grooming him for the vice presidential slot.
Sure.
And
I have been, you know, for a year. You've heard me say this on this program. When the Republicans were debating each other, I was like, which one is going to have the right to run with Marco Rubio?
Well, that's right. And it's interesting. The White House told me a long time ago, sort of off the record, and now I can say it's a little more on the record, somebody who was working at the White House in a major position said it's going to be Romney Rubio.
Yeah.
And that was probably in August. So basically, he said, well, if we start doing less, who's going to do more? Who's going to lead if we do not? He went after...
He being Rubio.
He, Rubio, went after President-elect Putin in a major way. Hmm. He called him a needlessly paranoid leader. I mean,
he's trying to restart the Cold War.
He was really off charts. He said that, well, others need to act, but the world would not be a safe place if the United States. Then he went back to Putin and he said, Putin might talk tough, but he knows he's weak. I mean, he just said words that I don't understand why the Romney campaign, which clearly vetted this, would be...
Because fear sells on the Republican side. If you can be afraid of somebody, it sells. And what's happened is that the fear of brown people is starting to fade, and in fact is starting to get pushed back.
And the fear of gay people.
And the fear of gay people no longer works. And the fear of Muslim immigrants, you know, shows that they're pretty good citizens, generally speaking. And so they've got to have somebody else to be afraid of. So let's dust off the Cold War. Let's bring out the Russians again. And the fear of the Chinese doesn't work because, you know, we want to keep buying their stuff, right?
Right.
What do they got? I mean, people aren't afraid of Kyrgyzstan, you know, but Russia, they got nukes.
Right.
So
that's true. So,
that's my theory.
That's very interesting. Well, he also closed by saying there's few global problems we can solve by ourselves. There are virtually no global problems that can be solved without us. And then he talked about foreign aid and how important we were already in foreign aid. Well, in fact, on the list of in terms of gross domestic product, we're 19 in countries in foreign aids. We give 0.21% of our GDP in terms of overall money. Yes, we are. We give the most money, actual hard dollars. But for instance, if you look at percentage of GDP, Sweden gives 1.12% of their GDP, followed by Norway. Even the UK gives double what we give.
Well, and if you do it on a per capita basis, you'll discover worse. Yeah.
That's right. So for per capita, that's what we
give.
Oh,
that's per capita.
That's right. U.S. hard dollars, it's $28 billion. Followed by France, believe it or not, at $12 billion. So hard dollars, we give more per capita. We're 19th in terms of countries.
But Marco Rubio's bragging about it?
Yeah, he's bragging about what we're doing.
Yeah.
It was a pretty astounding speech. He said that for every, and he said basically every reference to unrest in Central Africa or war in Afghanistan, he arrived back at his main theme, which is the world is a better place because of American engagement, and it will continue to get better only if we continue to engage.
Where did he give his speech?
At the Brookings.
He's here in D.C.
Yes.
So, but without Romney.
Without Romney.
So Marco Rubio is building his CV here for
but
the
I can't
DP.
Believe that that this was not vetted by the Romney people.
Oh, I'm totally
I hope it. People pick up on the fighting words he said about Russia. That's just crazy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Eric Havian. He is an attorney for Common Cause, commoncause.org, of course, the website. Eric, welcome back to the program, or welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. What's the latest with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, this right-wing front group for big corporations that's so heavily funded by the Koch brothers?
Well, for years, ALEC's been getting away with... you know, claiming to be an educational charity and in fact is simply nothing more than a lobbying organization, as you mentioned, for right-wing conservative causes. And Common Cause has called them out, reported them to the IRS, and asked the IRS to undertake an investigation and an examination. and to deny ALEC 501c3 nonprofit status, and also to go after the corporations who have been deducting their lobbying expenses when they make contributions to ALEC. They claim they're making charitable contributions, and the taxpayers are essentially footing the bill. This is what this is taxpayer-subsidized lobbying, which is against the rules and violates the Internal Revenue Code.
It's amazing. ALEC, of course, having brought us not only a whole raft of laws that make it easier for companies to pollute and whatnot, but also the Stand Your Ground, Shoot First law, and also the voter, you want to vote, but you're a student? No, you can't. That ID is no good. Oh, you want to vote, but you're 80 years old? No, sorry, you got to drive down to the driver's license bureau. You want to vote, you're disabled, you can't leave your home? Sorry, you can't vote. They're in charge of those laws, too, right?
That's right. That's the number of they have a lot of social legislation, although they, you know, in response to the pressure by Common Cause and their corporate, some of their corporate funders pulling the plug, they've now shut down, supposedly, their social agenda, and they're strictly focusing on putting more money into the pockets of their corporate donors.
Right, after they've already gotten this in place in over 20 states. Just for our listeners who may not know, we're talking with Eric Havian. He is an attorney with Common Cause, commoncause.org, if you want to check out their website and support the work that they're doing. While we often associate the Koch brothers with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, they didn't actually found it. It was started by a fellow by the name of Paul Weyrich. I'm guessing you're familiar with this, Eric. And Paul Weyrich was a strategist for Ronald Reagan. And I'd like to play, if I may have your permission to take 20 seconds out of this interview. Here is Paul Weyrich in 1980. Speaking to a group of Republicans who were working on behalf of Ronald Reagan in a church, Republican Christian activists. And you can hear the echo of this modern-day voter disenfranchisement legislation. This is Paul Weyrich from 30 years ago.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's the founder of ALEC.
Yeah, well, that pretty much sums up their attitude toward a number of these issues that they pursue. And, you know, what I think is very troubling for Common Cause is not just their politics. It's that they are having taxpayers pay to have these kinds of laws lobbied. And so, you know, if Exxon goes into some politician's office on Capitol Hill and they say, hey, I'd like to sit down and write some great tax legislation with you and let's get Exxon some tax breaks. Well, that's lobbying. You know, Exxon can't deduct that from their taxes. But if they have exactly the same conversation on a beach someplace at an ALEC junket, now Exxon's going to write that off and say, well, I was actually, those expenses were charitable contributions.
Well, and not only that, various states spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a year sending largely Republican legislators to these ALEC junkets where they sit on the beach and write legislation with the ExxonMobil lobbyists.
That's absolutely right, and claim that they're doing, you know, charity work and educational work, and it's really just absurd for ALEC to take that position. Their lawyer says all they do is research and analysis, nonpartisan research and analysis. Well, you know, you just look at their bylaws and you know that's completely false. Their bylaws say that their goal is to develop a legislative action agenda. It's not research and analysis, it's action, and that's really what they've been doing.
Now, we've been seeing largely since the Reagan administration, but aggressively since the first George Bush administration when he put his son in charge of reaching out to the evangelical Christian community and they started organizing and Jerry Falwell and all that whole crowd, you know, came about in the late 80s and early 90s. And then it really went on steroids through the George W. Bush administration, the politicization of religion, basically of religious organizations, which are equally tax exempt. And the IRS has been pretty wary about pulling anybody's tax-exempt status, even when they call for particular types of votes. What makes you think that the IRS might suddenly start enforcing the law after, you know, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I mean, I may be way off, but it seems to me like for decades, nonprofit organizations have been getting away with this kind of stuff.
Well, there are certain organizations, you know, sometimes they're religious organizations, that essentially engage in a lot of political activity under the rubric of advancing their religious beliefs. The IRS has been nervous about going after them. That's true. I think they are worried about the political hornet's nest they may stir up. But we think ALEC is a bit different because it's not just that you have a nonprofit that is engaged in political activity. You have corporations here that are advancing corporate agendas and deducting. It's not like you have some people in a congregation that are they're making donations to their church and taking the deduction, and then the church goes out and does some political work. This is really a corporation that is using ALEC as a way to make tax-deductible lobbying contributions. And so that's what I think is a lot different.
This is a money laundering operation.
Exactly, exactly. That is just what this is. It is money laundering. It is taxpayer-subsidized lobbying by corporations. That's who the contributors to ALEC are, not like, you know, individuals, mom and pop, you know. That's not who it is.
It's AT&T. So when I pay my phone bill, if I have AT&T, part of my money, part of my bill is going to ALEC. And when I'm paying my taxes, you know, my taxes are higher than they would have been if ALEC wasn't there, if AT&T actually had to do non-tax deductible lobbying.
That's right. You're getting the double whammy. If you're paying for the services of these corporations and you're a taxpayer, you're getting hit twice.
I'm getting screwed twice. Let's call it what it is. This is
it's kind of an outrage. And I do think the IRS, where you have corporations who are deducting hundreds of thousands of dollars in contributions from their taxes, as opposed to some member of a congregation that's going to deduct their, you know, $50 donation.
Right.
That's going to make a difference to the IRS.
Yeah. So we have just a minute left here, Eric. Where is this right now?
Well, there's a very formalized process that the IRS has for these whistleblower submissions. There's a screening that goes on. They'll see if it passes kind of the initial look to make sure it looks credible and persuasive. And then if so, it'll be sent out to the field for the examiners to do an audit. They tend to go very slowly and methodically, so we may not see any results for the next few years. But ALEC is, and the corporations who are being audited by the IRS, they're going to know. And it may be that some information comes out when they report them being under examination.
I'm looking forward to that. Eric Havian, with Common Cause, an attorney for Common Cause, commoncause.org, one of the great organizations doing great work here in the United States, well worthy of your support. Eric, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Keep up the great work. This is spectacular. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and Robert Reich explains private debt to equity ratios in a way that actually is fun and interesting. Stick around.
Well, it's all right.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We've been talking about student debt and the general insanity of the Republicans who want to raise student interest rates, and my notion that the most important infrastructure in our country is not our roads and our bridges and our buildings and our water and our air. It's our intellectual infrastructure, because it precedes everything else. And nothing happens until somebody knows how to make something, and you have to know how. Ed Needham is with us. He is the Occupy Wall Street press relations person. He's live from the IT Day parade at Union Square. And Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom, and thank you very much for all your comprehensive reporting on the movement.
Oh, it's an honor. I mean, you guys are doing the do, and it's important and critical stuff that y'all are doing. So tell us what's going on in New York today.
Well, right now I'm about 100 yards in front of the parade that's happening, that's coming down from the rally we just had at Union Square, where we talked about the relationship between Wall Street money and higher education, and how it's creating a generation of indentured servitude in this country, and how we're looking at a situation that is remarkably like what we had when the mortgage loan debt bubble burst. We had debt being repackaged and sold by Wall Street as assets, and that's the same thing is happening right now
with student loans. And at the same time, you've got more millions of people struggling with their student loans and defaulting at a higher rate. So what we're saying is that the relationship between Wall Street investors and higher education has got to stop. It is a, education is a right. It is not a Wall Street financial market.
Yeah, and Wall Street has turned it into a financial market, and I just find it astounding that, by and large, all these Republicans are supporting actually raising the interest rate on student loans. I don't think that I don't think student loans should even be an issue in this country. I think that anybody, as Thomas Jefferson, I mean, he created the University of Virginia for free, as a free university. And, you know, the University of California used to be free. City University of New York used to be free. Up until Reagan came along, it was quite possible for anybody with the competence to go to college, to get a college education, or the competence to go to a trade school, to go to a trade school and have a career that they could raise, you know, a family and have a middle class life. And 30 years of Reaganomics has destroyed that and, you know, handed this off to our banksters. And you guys are out there in the front speaking out against it. How can people support Occupy Wall Street in this?
Well, we you know, there are 22 other actions happening across the country today by people who came in for it and said, listen, this is ridiculous. We want to do something about it. We want to do it here at University of Texas of Austin. We want to do it at the University of Chicago. We want to do it in California in Occupy Maine. So all kinds of places have been doing things that they've come up with, really creative ways about how to raise the level of awareness about this issue, and about how devastating it is right now for millions of families and how it could really have an incredible ripple effect across the economy should this bubble burst. So there's a number of different things that are happening. And, here in New York, you know, we have our own actions that we're involved in, and we've tried our best to, you know, help coordinate some things and help, spread the word and the message across the other, occupations.
So, Ed Needham, the main thing that people can do is tell their friends?
Is tell their friends is to do something, get up off the couch, take some action, put your foot down, put your feet in the streets, and say that we cannot do this no more. America deserves better than what the two parties have given us. We, you know, reform is not going to change this. A lessening in student interest rates is not going to change this. They're just putting a Band-Aid on a tumor and telling people to go home.
Right.
We need revolutionary change. We need a change to the system. We've got to get money out of education as much as we do politics.
I absolutely agree with you. Ed Needham, Occupy Wall Street, Press Relations. Ed, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Tom. Anytime we can help.
And please pass my very best regards along to everybody there who's out on the streets and who's doing the tough work of being on the front lines. I honor you. I respect you.
Well, thanks. Spirits are high, and we're doing great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great talking with you. Ed Needham with Occupy Wall Street. As I said, this is where the rubber meets the road. Ella in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Ella, what's up?
It's L, if you don't mind.
Oh, I'm sorry, L.
It's okay.
Hi, L.
First, I want to send my regards on to Louise. I had a bilateral mastectomy 2 months ago, and I'm in the middle of chemo.
Oh, my.
Send my best to her.
Okay.
And
she's listening, so I'm sure she heard that.
I want to tell you I'm a little bit nervous, but I do disagree with you about making higher education free.
Mm-hmm.
And I do need to tell you that I'm a professor since 1988, almost
mm-hmm.
25 years. I'm a full professor now. I even lecture in some different countries on invitation. And I disagree with you. I do want to say I'd like to see higher education, and by that I mean trade schools, community college, and university available to everyone who has the incentive and the ambition, but I don't want to make it free. And I have friends who our professors in Germany and other countries as well. And so I have reasons for this position, and maybe I can change your mind.
Okay, we have 1 minute until the break. Go for it.
Well, I want to say when you give something free to someone, the first question they ask is, why can't you give me more? And they don't value it. And I think there's two things we can do. The first idea is not mine. It comes from Australia where I lectured. And it does something besides giving people an access to education. It also connects each generation to the generation before them and the generation after them, so it builds community. And specifically, you can go to college as long as you want, and the government keeps track of how much money you've been at college and et cetera. So if it takes you 6 years or 3 years or 10 years, and when you come out and make a certain amount of money, and it's a nice living wage, and only after you make that amount does the government garnish your wages? And it's at just a fraction more, just a small percentage more than what you paid in. So you realize that you're thankful because the generation before you made this possible, and you're giving back to the generation after you.
That's not unreasonable. The variation on that that I've suggested is what they do in Germany, which is if you give a year of public service after high school, and it doesn't need to be in the military, it can be in a nonprofit, then you qualify for free education.
And I, there's something else, too, and I know we're running out of time,
yeah.
But that's, I've been at State University three different ones since 1988. And I've seen with the decrease in state funding how...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
10 seconds to finish, Al.
Oh, so I've seen with the decrease in state funding, it's become like a corporation and consumerism. And
yes,
it's all about
retention. That's a problem. Al, we're out of time. Thank you so much. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very procellus matatiously ugly. I think I said it right. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com. I need more of it. Food for your brain. They're good. The German bank West LB. Last week, the German bank announced that it would not provide any financing for offshore oil or gas drilling in the Arctic Ocean. West LB's sustainability manager, Dustin Neunmeyer, said that the risks of drilling in the Arctic were simply too high. The bank's decision comes a week after banking and insurance giant Lloyd's of London urged companies to, quote, think carefully about the consequences of exploring for oil in the Arctic. Let's hope more banks do the right thing for once and help protect the Arctic from the greedy oil barons. The bad. Missouri State Representative Dwight Schnarnhorst. Schnarnhorst is a co-sponsor of the state's so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which would prevent teachers from talking about LGBT people and issues in public schools. Discussing his support for the bill, Schnarnhorst said, "Sexual orientation issues should be taught by parents, clergy, and physicians, and teaching LGBT issues could lead to other discussions." He ended his remarks by saying, "There is no need to talk about Billy wanting to marry a goat." And just when you thought the conservative war on gays and marriage equality couldn't get any uglier. And the very, very ugly John Harris. Harris, president of the Tennessee Firearms Association, expressed outrage when Republican state politicians refused to support a gun bill that would allow people to bring guns to work, provided they left them in their cars. Harris said that the House Republican Caucus Chair Deborah Magert should be politically crucified. His words. In the wake of the Trayvon Martin tragedy, Schnarnhorst wants to turn our office places into scenes from the mythical Wild Wild West. And he's invoking the same kind of political hatred that nearly killed Representative Gabby Giffords. And that is very, very ugly. That's very, very ugly. It's incredible. Ugly. Okay, I promised you Robert Reich talking about private equity, Bain Capital. This is Robert Reich in 8 simple steps, 1 minute, explaining how Mitt Romney made $250 million.
Let me explain the magic of private equity in 8 simple steps. Step one, partners in private equity firms don't risk their own money. They get other people to give them money to invest. Step two, they use this money to buy up companies they think they can squeeze higher profits from. Step three, they squeeze out higher profits by cutting the company's costs. And for most companies, the biggest cost is payrolls. So private equity managers typically reduce payrolls by firing workers and or cutting other workers' wages and their health and pension benefits. Step four, they also use the company as collateral to borrow a pile of money from banks. And since interest payments on this debt are deductible from company income, presto, the company shows even bigger profits. Step five, they get the company to issue a special dividend to repay the original investors. So now everything else is gravy. Step six, Then they sell the company for much more than they bought it for because, hey, it's more profitable. Step 7, they pocket 20% of the gains from the sale. And finally, step 8, because the tax law treats these earnings as capital gains, they pay only a 15% tax on them.
And that's how Mitt Romney made $22 million last year and paid 14.9% income tax, 13.9% income tax. Nice work if you can get it, huh? It's mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. Anyway. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number. Let's get back to your calls. Hank in Ola, Hawaii? Ola'a? How do you say that, Hank?
That's Ola'a.
Ola'a, okay. What's up?
Yes. Tom, I really appreciate you taking my call. I wanted to call you to alert all the people of the United States that you really have to watch what's going on in Hawaii. With the military buildup and the Pacific buildup, the mandate of the president, what's happening in Hawaii is all stopgap measures for environmental processing, contested cases, everything that you can imagine that the people have a right to contest something is all being gutted.
Hmm.
It's just horrendous. The military buildup is just unbelievable. That's going on here, and there's land grabs going on. The legislature has been ordered basically to take down all the defense mechanisms for environmental protections, review processes, and of course it's all on the backs of the Native Hawaiians.
Wow.
And I wanted to bring this to your attention because this is because the states look at each other for different kinds of legislation. This is the prototype for what's going to happen to the rest of the United States, the method in which they're using it. And I think it's very important that your listeners, I'm a supporter of free speech TV myself,
mm-hmm.
But the rest of the world needs to know it. I've been watching free speech TV for about 2 years now, and there's never anything about Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so important that the rest of the United States look at what's going on here.
Yeah,
it's coming to town too.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that, Hank. And Hawaii just made Free Speech TV, so you got the story out. Hopefully, some activism will come out of it. I appreciate your call, and you know, keep us up to date on how things are going. Okay.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, Gail in Seattle. Hey, Gail, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Oh, hi, Tom, and hi, Louise too. I think we've overlooked the biggest thing that we need to do to make everything else work. And why is education not free? We're the teachers. Why is healthcare not free? We're knee-deep in healers because we all have to pay the rent.
Yeah.
Everybody's paying the rent. So how did we overlook the right to a home? I think that the one thing that would heal everything else would be if we decided as a country, every single one of us, that it is our sacred birthright to have a home that can never be taken away.
That was one of the Second Bill of Rights items that Franklin Roosevelt came up with after World War II. And just in the months before he died, he proposed a Second Bill of Rights, which included the right to a home, the right to a job, the right to health care, the right to an education, and there might have been a fifth that I'm forgetting. But those, he said, if we were to enshrine these as rights, then it would be the job of the legislature to figure out how everybody gets them. But that those should be non-negotiable, and that the government would step in as the employer of last resort, for example, if you couldn't find a job any other way, et cetera. And I think he had nailed it. And I think, Gail, that you're onto it, too. And this is... as I've said probably way too many times, I mean, this is even biblical. This is just a core stuff. Gail, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to Talk 1090. It's great to hear from you. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call in regards to your wife. My wife is a survivor of uterine cancer. But anyway, what I wanted to say was, I think it's partly true that people are led by the media. But, you know, I think also there's something in them that allows them to be lied to. You know, you have to want to know the truth. And I'm not talking about, you know, only certain segments of society, just across the board. You know, Will Rogers was a great example of somebody that could really, you know, get through a lot of the garbage, a lot of the junk, and get at the real crux of issues, because I think he was a truth teller and he was seeking, you know, the truth.
You know, the modern day version of Will Rogers is Jim Hightower.
Yes, yes, and he's a great person. And you know, I listen to you because I feel that you know your brand. I mean, I trust your opinion, and you know, I don't listen to you uncritically, but I came to Free Speech TV. I came to Democracy Now because I'm sick of being lied to. But that's something that I want to do, and at great cost. But at the same time, in the long run, I feel it's worthwhile to know the truth. Often, I think people want their opinion just reinforced because there's something wrong with them. They're greedy themselves, so they want to listen to the greedy banksters. They're greedy themselves, they want to listen to the politicians that are espousing a lot of this crap. So I do think that, we're not just blank slates that are fed information. It's filtered through all of these different filters, and I don't let people off the hook. I think, you know what, you have access to newspapers, you have a certain amount of spending money or leisure time that you could devote to that. Get off your keister and go down and get involved in some politics. Actually, you inspired me, and I'm not saying this to, just as a kudo or anything to you, but it was very inspiring because you had inspired me to get involved in
politics.
Hold
on a second, John.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Sorry, the machine does that. You have 10 seconds.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to say, you know, I don't let people off the hook. You
okay.
Know?
Good on you. Good on you. John, thanks so much for calling. Thanks for your kind words.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Good news! I just got an email from Bernie Sanders, but I'm going to let Judy tell you all about it. She's on the line from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and wants to share the news. Judy, it's all yours.
Let me get off speaker, Tom.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just been watching C-SPAN for the last couple of days with all the amendments, and one of the amendments, 2036, was our senator here, Mr. Pryor, that none of the post offices will close anything until enactment. Of course, he did make the comment that that depended on the House and when and if they passed it through
right.
The House. But
if I may interrupt you, Judy, just for a moment, because neither one of us started out by telling people what we're talking about.
The making changes to Postal Service Act, S-1789.
That's right, the bill that Bernie Sanders has been working on.
Right, it passed 62-37 in the Senate.
Yep, and that's
and
that's
they are
projected.
Currently voting on the or debating on the Violence Against Women Act. So,
and it'll be interesting to see how many Republicans vote for that.
Well, I got my TV muted, I can't hear them.
Okay.
There's Senator Hutchison from Republican up right now.
Oh, interesting. I
have it muted, and also I am a monthly donor to Free Speech.
Oh, good on you. Good on you. Free Speech TV needs your help. Judy,
right.
Thank you so much for calling and sharing 62-37. Yeah, the Bernie's bill, or Bernie played a role in this bill, Bernie Sanders' bill.
He was one of the sponsors. But they did have 61 sponsors for this bill in the Senate, so I was pretty sure it was going to pass.
Yeah. That's absolutely great. So this is the beginning of the recovery of the post office.
But
it still has to get through the House.
We have an uphill battle in the House.
Oh, yeah, where Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and John Boehner are so far fairly hostile to this. So now it's important to start calling your member of the House of Representatives and say,
that's
time to save the post
say.
Office.
Oh, I've been beating them to death on it. I think they all know me by now.
Okay, good on you, Judy. Thank you for the call, and thanks a lot for watching Free Speech TV. Great to hear from you. Remarkable. Richard in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hey, Richard, what's up? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Yeah, I was just listening over, and I was wondering which Republicans are pushing for higher interest rates on student loans. Are they making the push in Congress? Is there a bill proposed? Or?
Well, the way it works is if they don't pass legislation before July 1st, then it will automatically raise. And it'll go from roughly 3% to around roughly 6%. And the Democrats are pushing this piece of legislation to keep it where it is at 3%, which is still profitable for Sallie Mae. I mean, it's a good deal for the students, and it's not a bad deal for the government. But the Republicans are saying, you know, if we jack this thing up to 6%, it's going to make billions of dollars in profit, which we can use to reduce the deficit and therefore give a bigger tax cut to the millionaires and billionaires.
Well, or is it tied to something else in the bill that they oppose,
no.
And they don't necessarily oppose that part
no,
of it?
No, it's not. So far, it's standalone. It's all about. In fact, I debated this with last Friday with Brian Darling from the Heritage Foundation on TV, and you know what the Republicans are saying is why you don't want the government to make billions of dollars in revenue. And I'm like, no, not if it's coming off the back of our students. I don't think that our students should be paying for it. Richard, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Diana in Alexandria, Minnesota. Hey, Diana.
Yeah.
What's up?
Hi there. You know, that lady that was talking about nobody should get free education, she's stupid.
I don't think she's stupid. I disagree with her that things we get for free we don't value. I drive on public streets and I don't pay for them, and I do value them. So I disagree with her premise, but
believe
I don't think
me,
she
I
was
value
stupid.
I drive on them every day.
Yeah. But
anyway, my friend did a program through high school that he could take college courses, and the state of Minnesota paid for them.
Right.
And I think that's what all of these high schools need to start doing, because those kids, he is out of school now 4 years. And he is working $65,000 a year job, and he got all his education while he was finishing high school. He actually graduated a week before high school.
Right.
He graduated his technical school.
Yeah.
And then I have one that got a program that he has learning disabilities, and he's just finishing up a program through the state of Minnesota again that will give him a job to be a welder. Where this kid probably would have ended up washing dishes for the rest of his life because I couldn't afford to send him to school.
No, I think it's a marvelous thing, Diana. And in fact, one thing I would add is when people go to school, and having done that and having struggled in school, I can tell you my first electrical engineering course made me crazy, and I thought I knew it all. I can tell you, it's hard work. So even if somebody's paying your tuition, you're still working your way through school because you're working.
Exactly. I'm very proud of my youngest son. He's has learning disabilities and stuff, and that kid put in, when other kids were dropping out when things got tough, he stuck with it. He worked. He was at school 14 hours a day some days.
Yeah.
And I am so happy. And I'm a single mom, and I've raised these boys the last 5-6 years on my own.
That's marvelous.
And
good on you, Diana. Diana, I want to get one more call in real quickly, but thank you for calling. You made a wonderful point. Mark Taylor Canfield. Mark, we got 30 seconds to the end of the show. It's all yours.
Oh, my God. Hi, Tom. In Seattle, we are celebrating 1T Day today, and I also want to report on a great victory for freedom of speech. A federal judge has sided with the protesters here. Occupy Seattle attorneys went to a federal judge. They granted a temporary restraining order stopping the city of Seattle from ending our 24-hour occupation in downtown at Westlake Park. So people set up tents, and there were about 100 people who slept in the park last night because the federal judge says that that is freedom of speech, because it was specifically in protesting an eviction of a homeless camp that's in Beacon Hill. And Dr. Cornell West was here last night talking about poverty, so there's a great example of
on
our streets.
That's
in
absolutely
Seattle.
Marvelous. Mark Taylor Canfield, thanks for the update, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
Always appreciate your calls. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program, when did the right to work become the right to work for less? I'll confront Vincent Vernuccio of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, plus my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science. Can exercise actually make you smarter? and the best of the rest of the news along with your calls in the Tom Hartman program. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tag, you're it. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.